This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
It is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. We're big fans of Reddit. Are you, Matt? I'm a big fan of Reddit.
I know you are. I'm kind of less so because I think I've got a little bit less patience. So yeah. There's a bit too much.
You really got to dig deep.
Yeah, digging deep. And my attention span goes for the first half dozen posts. Once I start digging into the crazies, I'm like, nah, I'm giving this up.
And I guess the reason why this next story is at risk, or it's slightly striking fear to us, because Reddit is now testing out that if they do it successfully, it probably could take on the Twitch platform, which is the biggest like live streaming platform, or like YouTube's live streaming. I know even Microsoft has their own kind of live streaming platform. So Reddit is now launching something they're calling the Reddit Public Access Network, or the RPAN. Basically, it's the first broadcasting tool that will let users to broadcast directly from their subreddit, and they could, you know, broadcast anything to the world. Although not everyone apparently will be able to broadcast. You got to be approved by Reddit first, and then there's like a whole bunch of like, you know, things that you can't do. So the basic ones are the obvious ones, like, you know, no pornography or illegal or dangerous behavior. But the new policy also states that borderline behavior is also prohibited.
Yeah, so any of the forums, I think, that have been put under what they call quarantine,
yeah,
are not, you're not allowed to do broadcasts on those kind of subjects. So I think quite a few of them have been quarantined or removed, including the big Donald Trump forum on Reddit. So you do have to be careful with the content. At the moment, as you said, yeah, it's being curated. They're limiting it to, I think, 100, 100 feeds a day. And people can only broadcast for up to 30 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
And for some reason, they're only running from 9 o'clock in the morning till 5 o'clock at night, which kind of...
PST time.
Yeah, yeah. Pacific Standard Time. Which kind of... It's a bit weird considering, you know, a large number of your users are actually dispersed across the world. But, you know, I guess, you know, it is just a test at this point.
But it's weird because, you know, for most of its like 14, 15 year history, Reddit has only been like this text platform. And it looks very much like the web back in the 80s, in the 90s, right? It's just a pure forum. It's a public forum. Anyone could comment anything, and it's just pure text with a couple of memes and
I think that's the thing that puts me off a lot of the time, because I look at it and I'm just like, no, I don't want to go back to that time in my life.
And it's 2019 now, and you know, we're going to move into 2020, a completely new decade. So it's hard to be a platform without the element of live video. We've all seen it with Twitter. They've got Periscope. Google's got the YouTube Live. Amazon's, they've got Twitch. You know, Facebook, they've got their Facebook Live. Microsoft even has, you know, another sort of like live streaming platform on their own. So Reddit clearly wants to be a part of this, but exactly how they're going to bring this to life is kind of still remain a question. Also, is it going to be more like is it just going to be another YouTube or Twitch?
Well,
or
that's what I was thinking. I mean, I would imagine it would, I mean, I imagine it's going to end up being a bit like YouTube, but with Reddit as your comment section, right? So,
but why as well just stick to the Reddit then? Because the Reddit's all about the comments. It's all about creating that conversation.
But that's what I mean. I think the videos are going to be conversation starters. I don't think you're going to see people answering each other in video, because it doesn't really make sense. It's a bit too, there's too much process involved. There's the recording, the uploading, the delay, where, of course, as you said, you can just reply someone in a few seconds. So I've got a feeling that these are going to end up being conversation starters. But as Reddit point out themselves, it may open up new areas for forums to develop, as for example, not the greatest example, but they mentioned, I think, that when they allowed photos and videos to be posted, you know, and links to videos to be posted, it opened it up to a lot of jugglers. So a lot of forums for jugglers. So they're anticipating that this live streaming video being the kind of same, it opens up different areas for forums to discuss.
Which, like you said, it's not really the best of examples, but it came from them. And, you know, it just feels like, oh, that's a poor argument there, because we know the dangers of live streaming, right? I think, you know, earlier this year, the new, what happened in New Zealand when, you know, a guy uploaded a video on Facebook Live.
Yeah, the Christchurch
went on for 17 minutes before it was taken down. And, you know, Facebook spent a lot of money on video and live streaming, and, you know, they themselves admitted that, you know, that was something that should never have ever happened. And despite Facebook spending billions and billions of US dollars onto improving their technology, Reddit is still very new when it comes to this live streaming video and what people can do with it.
It is. And we also know that, you know, a lot of sort of trolling behavior has existed on Reddit subreddits for a long time. You know, it's moved out to other sites like 4chan and 8chan and those kind of things as well, and into the kind of darker web. But yeah, there is potential for this to be abused, that's for sure. Reddit seem confident that they have the steps in place to prevent that from happening, but then Facebook were confident they had the steps in place to prevent that from happening. So it really is a case of seeing how it's going. I think at the moment, it's actually Reddit's own moderators who are looking into the content. But by and large, Reddit is moderated by the users. And I don't think when it comes to live streaming, that's a job that you can leave to other users, because it's too much pressure.
Mm. Also, it, you know, if mentally it can be damaging. We've seen reports on The Verge when, you know, they, I think, was it Verge or Vice or Vox, when I think it was The Verge, where they you know, followed through Facebook moderators, and, you know, the damage they have mentally,
the psychological damage, because a lot of them are from outsourced companies in countries like the Philippines, and they're paid a very low rate, and, you know, we were finding that the level of mental health support was there for the moderators that were in-house with the companies, but not there for the third-party contracted moderators. So yeah, there is definitely a danger.
And it's weird because all these tech companies, they always say they're very confident of, you know, going through solving this issue. You know, don't worry so much. We have the right policies and agreements in place. They've not once sort of came out and made truth to that statement.
No,
all
of
the
course,
big companies.
Because in the same way that we're all confident that we're not going to crash our car when we go out in the morning, but for a small percentage of people, they will have an accident and crash their car. So, you know, you can't predict when the unpredictable is going to happen.
I'm not excited. I'm a big Reddit user and a Reddit fan, but I'm completely not excited with, you know, Reddit going live stream, because I think there's more danger than sort of business sense involved here. So I don't understand why Reddit is doing this. Maybe they'll prove me wrong. Time
says,
will tell.
Says the person who will probably be Reddit's first breakout live streaming star.
We shall see about that. Anyways, when we come back, we do have King of Culture, but it's not something that, you know, I'm probably used to, or anyone's probably used to. Stay tuned. You'll find out. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
Begin fun moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
And we're back. It is time now for King of Culture. This is not something like or understand, but...
Okay, no, this is just emojis. This is just emojis
in
general. I get
emojis, okay.
Yes, so the theory is just emojis. Now, I've done a couple of guest appearances on other shows recently, which have asked me what I think about the kind of encroachment of emojis into normal spoken language. Mm-hmm. And I've always said it's a very healthy thing because, you know, emojis are kind of love them or hate them. People either use them a lot or they're like, you know, they're eroding language skills and all of this kind of thing. But a study has actually found that emojis can bring us closer together, that they can help us to form emotional bonds. Now, the way that this survey was carried out is probably a little bit odd to get the results. They looked at people who used emojis on dating sites, and they found that the people who used emojis were more likely to score successful hookups with potential partners than people who didn't use emojis. So it seems that the emoji process is a way of shortcutting that process of forming those bonds. Emotional bonds. Mm. Yeah. So the study, I think, was carried out in the Public Library of Science in their journal One. So it is a proper scientific study. They canvassed several thousand users of these sites to see what the response rates were. And yes, people who are more successful on dating sites tended to use more emojis, which hints that this use of emojis is actually a good way for us to maintain friendships with people that we're not actually speaking to. So it's a good way of keeping up those emotional connections. If you're not using a video link, if you're not chatting to somebody on the phone, it is a very nice way of staying in touch and making relationships.
There you have it, the love guru.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, use emojis.
Use emojis. Well, yeah, if I could use an emoji now to describe what I'm feeling to that story, it's just eyes rolling and talk to the hand.
Yeah, mine would be a little green.
Anyways, researchers at the UC Berkeley used a functional MRI to measure 9 volunteers' brains activity using blood flow as a proxy as they listened to and then read stories from the Moth Radio Hour. If you don't know the Moth Radio Hour, I suggest you to, you know, whatever podcast channels that you use, go and download them, listen to them. They're really good. They're basically podcasts that is stories that they read out stories. So it's a storytelling podcast which airs on, like, you know, 500 over radio stations around the world. So the researchers collected volunteers' brain activity data for reading and one word at a time to help separate the data, and listening to the recordings of the same text, and then match both sets of data against time-stamped transcriptions of the story. And the result is they can now map out the brain activity to guess what you are actually reading. So words like social category include words like husband, father, and sister. Different categories sparked activity in different parts of the brain. So these social words were found on the right side behind the ear. This area also responded strongly to words that describe people or dramatic events, as well as words that describe time. And the biggest surprise came from the fact that apparently reading and listening to stories, they concluded there are a lot of similarities in the brain activity. So why this matters is because maybe, hopefully in the future, by understanding how brain processes words, we could help build better language decoders and, you know, help patients who have language disorders and dyslexia and so on and so forth. So
yeah, and I mean, because I've mentioned on the show before, I switched to audiobooks from reading books a few years ago because of problems with reading text. And it is surprising how similar the two experiences are.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of adjustment to begin with, because I found I had to change the way I concentrated in order to take the information in. But now it's almost as though
you are reading the book.
Yeah, almost as though I'm reading, yeah. So, you know, you can visualize the words. So I can completely understand how this could work. But we've talked quite a few times about this kind of brain reading technology to figure out whether we're thinking about things emotionally, whether we're thinking about things clinically, to kind of decode our dreams and to come up with things that we're reading. So we really are pushing ahead with these kind of interfaces. And like you're saying, this can be used to help people with conditions like dyslexia. But we're also pushing into the area where, you know, getting people to recall stories from their lives is also a way to help people with a lot of kind of memory conditions. Yeah. So there are a lot of techniques that overlap in a lot of the research that's been done with brain reading technology at the moment.
Another technology that is helping mankind is for people who hate walking or running, because there is a new lightweight exoskeleton pants that has been developed by Harvard University and the University of Nebraska in Omaha. And they are the first device to assist with both walking and running using an algorithm that adapts to each gait. So the super shots, they kind of show how wearable exoskeleton might someday help us to perform all kinds of tasks. Progress in materials, actuators, and machine learning has led to this new generation of lighter and more powerful and more adaptive wearable systems. Bear in mind, though, this exosuit does weigh 5 kilograms, and it does say that it reduces a person's metabolic rate of 9.3% when walking and 4% when running. So I don't understand. Aren't we not supposed to increase the metabolism rate and help us to... But it makes you run faster, you know, walk faster, and it's able to detect when you're running and walking. So I guess for people who hate running...
I guess so. I mean, I can see it being used in, factories, warehouses where people are lifting and walking and carrying for long distances. You need help. But I shared this story with a friend who's a runner to see what he thought of it. And the first thing he said, but what about your knees? You know, because what you're really doing then is increasing the stress on your knees and your calves and your ankles, because not just the extra weight of the 5 kilos, but you're pushing your body to go beyond its limits, because, you know, however much training you do, your knees don't get any fitter. You don't put extra muscle on your knees. Yeah. You know, they just wear out over time. So you do wonder if this is kind of half of the suit. I would like to see the bottom half that actually protects the knees and the ankles as well.
But even the top half as well, because the body has to balance the feet as well when you run and when you walk, right? So there's more pressure now that you are able to walk faster, run further. You know, there's more pressure on your upper body as well. So.
Oh, not just that. I mean, there will also be, if you are more capable of doing things, you're also going to have more pressure from bosses. You know, we've one of the things we've talked about on MSP in the past is, you know, what if an employer decides that you need to have a robotic arm implant because it'll help you to reach things on the top shelf? And you can see how even something like this exoskeleton, because it enables you to run faster or walk faster and further for longer, that bosses can then start to set even higher targets for you in these kind of very labor-intensive occupations.
All right. Now it's time for your TM1 Tech Minute. Think how far your desktop and mobile devices have come over the last few years. Cloud-based artificial intelligence and integration are making our world a smarter place. Your emails now automatically prompt you to turn them into task or calendar entries, which seamlessly appear in your connected apps. That gives technology giants a huge advantage. They can use this tight integration and interoperability to lock you into their ecosystem. 5G technologies will make it easier for SME innovators to enjoy the same advantages as these giants. TM1's cost-effective secure cloud and back-end services ensure that your users' experience is simple, clean, and reliable, letting the innovation shine. Enabling a hyper-connected ecosystem made possible by TM1. And that was your TM1 Tech Minute. Matt, what do we have for GeekTunes?
We have a group of young British post-punks called Working Men's Club. They released their first single, I think, the beginning of this year. This is their second release. This is Bad Blood by Working Men's Club.
BFM 89.9.
Tech Talk, made possible by TM1. To learn more, visit tm1.com.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.